everybody. I'm Corey Guns. Welcome into this week's edition of KWR. Man, what a week it's been in wrestling. From Roman Reigns' emotional announcement on this past Monday's Raw about his leukemia diagnosis, to major character turns, to the uncertainty around the Crown Jewel event, it's definitely been a week that we didn't have a lack of material or lack of things to talk about this week, and we're going to touch on all of them and more on this week's edition of KWR. And joining me to talk about all things in and around what could end up being a real landscape-shifting week for the WWE, you've heard him on ESPN Radio, Fox Sports Radio. He's also getting ready to launch his own wrestling podcast here in the next couple of weeks. He's sports journalist, and joining us again on the Wrestle Report, Brad Shepherd. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you being back with us.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's kind of get right into it, and we'll start with, you know, kind of the biggest, obviously, happening of the week, Roman Reigns and his announcement on Raw about his battle with leukemia. I want to talk about your reaction to the announcement and then and talk about some other things as well. But first, if you could kind of take me back before Raw hit the air, you had reported on Twitter earlier in the day that there were reports that were confirming that Roman Reigns was injured, that he was had been off of house shows that weekend, and that you had kind of confirmed that he was injured or banged up, but that we would probably see on Monday how injured he was, depending on if he competed and things of that nature. So before the actual announcement hit the airwaves, what were you hearing and what were some of your sources telling you about his situation going into Monday Night Raw before he came out and actually made his announcement?
Yeah, so I first heard the report from Barstool Sports. Robbie had noted that there was an issue with Roman being injured. And I followed up on that, actually, and pretty quickly found out that there was something up with him. They weren't exactly sure what. They pretty much referred to it as him being possibly hurt and said something was up. But it was kind of mysterious because normally they would have more detail around the specifics of that. So it just kind of, as we found out later what it was, it kind of added up. It kind of made sense because people were left in the dark. So that's what I was definitely hearing. I knew something was going on and that we would have more information on Monday night on Raw. And we certainly did. I mean, it was a very emotional announcement. And unfortunately, you had Mike Johnson from PW Insider try to rumor kill my confirmation, saying that Roman Reigns is fine and was seen working out, et cetera, over the weekend. And as we now know, that certainly is not the case. He's not fine at all. His leukemia has returned 11 years later. A very, very emotional segment for me. This was very touching. This is the most human he's ever felt. It was real, raw emotion. It was great television because it was real. And the amount of sympathy that I had for Joe, not Roman, but Joe, the person, the man, the father, the husband, going through something so terrible. You know, it was just an incredible moment in WWE TV. And, you know, I'm really glad to see the support that Joe is getting from fans and fellow wrestlers and fellow wrestling promotions.
Yeah, I think it was such a surreal moment, you know, to see that announcement and, you know, to see somebody that, you know, no pun intended, but really plays a Superman on television. And a lot of times we kind of lose sight of the fact that, you know, behind those characters are actual people who are really going through real struggles and real problems. And so to see someone like that come out and make an announcement like that, you know, and when you hear the word leukemia or you hear the word cancer, it really just, you know, obviously strikes a chord that's different than I think really any other definitely retirement in the wrestling world. You know, I saw a lot of people comparing on Twitter his announcement to Edge's retirement or Daniel Bryan's retirement, just in the sense of the suddenness of it. And looking back, I thought, you know, it is sudden, but with those guys, at least it was, they are retiring because their bodies were maybe giving out or they had an injury, but, you know, their lives weren't on the line. You know, Roman Reigns is leaving the ring, not because an injury is forcing him, because he has to take time off to literally fight for his life. And I think that that's something that really isn't comparable to anything we've seen in the wrestling world, other than really maybe a wrestler's death, you know, like an Eddie Guerrero or someone who maybe dies and passes away unexpectedly. But I think even then, this just has a different feel to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. I mean, it's so unexpected. It's nothing he did in his career, per se, that caused this situation, you know, like a Daniel Bryan injury or, you know, another superstar's injury. This is totally out of his control. And frankly, you know, this is very serious when leukemia relapses, when you have it again. You know, your survival rate goes down significantly. Chemotherapy is extremely aggressive, and that's how they try and fight it. And it's going to be hell. And, you know, I wish Cho the best of luck.
Was it a known fact in some inner circles? I know that I was not aware at all that he had previously fought leukemia, you know, years ago. Was that something that was known in maybe, you know, inner circles within the WWE or even within some inside reporters that was maybe just kept kind of close to the vest? Or was this a personal decision by Roman that, you know, he didn't really want that to be public knowledge that he had fought, you know, this disease before?
Well, I think everybody has the choice to make of whether they want to come public with it or not. And they all have their motivations, especially if they're a public figure on TV. You know, I think maybe, you know, it wasn't a secret per se when he was younger, but of course he wasn't the celebrity he is now either. You know, it's 11 years later, but certainly I think it was, what he did was really courageous, deciding to go forward with, you know, announcing it. And, I think kudos to him, if that's what he decides, you know, then I respect that. At the same time, if he decided not to share that, I would respect that as well.
Have you gotten any information about when Roman was made aware of this diagnosis? Was there a reason that he, you know, possibly had gone for a checkup? Was it just a routine doctor's visit that kind of brought this up and showed some warning signs that something may be up? And also, do you know when the WWE was actually made aware of what exactly was going on with him? And then, you know, to make this decision, obviously, to have him announce an overall and vacate the Universal Championship.
Right. So he obviously had the symptoms that led him to a visit. And, you know, when you've had leukemia before, you understand the classic symptoms of it, you know, but WWE had known before Monday night, obviously. That's why Braun Strowman started turning babyface on house shows to prepare for this. And so they have known, not for too long, but they have known for, you know, probably at least going back to last week or so. And, you know, so that's why they started transitioning some of the superstars between babyface and heel roles.
Yeah, obviously a difficult situation for all parties involved. And like I've already mentioned, you know, I'm sure mine is just a drop in the bucket, but obviously our support and thoughts are with him and hoping for the best for Roman. It seems kind of weird to kind of transition into wrestling topics from here, but I guess we'll just kind of move along with it. The other kind of big happening on Raw, in addition to the Roman Reigns announcement, would probably have to be the heel turn by Dean Ambrose at the end of the night. A lot of people kind of expected this to happen, but then maybe thought that it was just kind of a red herring that maybe we would see, you know, Drew McIntyre turn face. You know, we had this whole Shield and Pac feud going on. Or if Dean were to turn heel, probably most people didn't think that on the night of all nights that it would be this past Monday, you know, accompanying Roman Reigns' announcement. What did you think of the heel turn? Did you think it was the right time? Was it the right night? What was your reaction to his heel turn on Seth Rollins in the main event?
Well, I thought it was one of the best heel turns on Monday Night Raw's history. It was very well executed and very well timed. And, you know, and it sounds morbid to say that, but what it's drawing out of people, and it's uncomfortable, but it's a real raw emotion. And that's something that's been lacking in, you know, I think in modern wrestling, that classic nuclear old school heel heat. And yes, they used a very tragic situation timing-wise to do that, but that's pro wrestling. And I thought it was done very nicely, and they have real potential to run with Dean Ambrose as a major heel.
Did you think that doing it on a night like Monday kind of prevented him from getting the Becky Lynch reaction, where a lot of people would have been happy to see him turn heel, and then thus he would have been cheered once he turned? And then so instead of doing it at a later date, they kind of capitalized on the fact that, you know, as you said, if he were to turn heel tonight on the night of all nights, there's no way anybody's going to be cheering for that, right?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think that actually really did probably help the situation in that regard, because, you know, people were ready for Dean Ambrose to turn heel. They want to see Dean, you know, be the crazy guy, the Brian Pillman, the Roddy Piper, that type of, you know, dangerous, psycho, crazy guy, rather than, you know, the toned down, wacky, goofy character he's been for so long. They know the potential there. They want to see him do that. And so there was that risk of him getting some cheers. But, you know, again, like you said, the timing of it made that very difficult to happen, and it worked in their benefit.
Now, in addition to Dean turning heel, we also saw, and you kind of touched on it a little bit ago, some other kind of character flips on the roster. Braun Strowman appears to be back as a babyface. It seemed like Elias was turned face. Bobby Lashley is a new heel. He already had kind of turned heel a couple weeks ago, but, you know, he seems firmly established now as one of the top heels on the brand. Were any of those character flips and turns rushed this Monday because of the Roman Reigns announcement? Even if they were kind of coming down the pipe anyway, did they feel like they needed to make some big roster adjustments because of the fact that they were losing, you know, their top guy unexpectedly?
Well, yeah, when you have something unexpected like that happen, you're going to make unexpected changes that maybe don't play out in such a great way from a storyline standpoint that you would like them to. You can't give them a lot of time. So I think a lot of them were like that. I mean, Bobby Lashley was fine because his character was just so boring, so bad. He lost all momentum he had. I think he really needed to turn heel immediately. So totally fine with that. Elias, to me, should have taken a little more time, but Elias should have been a babyface a long time ago. I think he has huge potential there, and is certainly, again, it was a very quick, all of a sudden he attacks Baron Corbin with a guitar. So it was just like, okay, that's a very quick, random babyface turn. But, you know, they could have played out more, but again, it was kind of rushed, and to your point. And I think Braun, the same thing, you know, but they needed that, again, due to the situation with Roman. They needed Braun to be babyface very quickly. So I do understand that.
Let's switch gears a little bit to another event that is definitely not without its controversy, Crown Jewel, which is coming up in a little bit less than 2 weeks. It'll be next weekend, supposedly. But some big news coming out, again, that you're reporting on Twitter on Monday, that reports coming out that Daniel Bryan and John Cena are both refusing to work the show, either definitely don't want to work the show, and some reports even saying that they're straight up refusing to go and will not work the show. Now, we've seen on SmackDown, you know, Daniel Bryan's angle with AJ Styles seems to be continuing as normal, that, you know, they're still headed for their match at Crown Jewel. John Cena, obviously a little bit different situation because he's not on TV from week to week. What are you hearing about both of those guys' situations, and what are each of their motivations for not wanting to work the show?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think their motivations are, you know, in particular in Daniel Bryan's case, it's just personal feelings and morals and ethics. And maybe there's some of that with John too, to be fair, but, you know, like it was explained to me by a source in WWE, he's a Hollywood guy now. He's got an image that he's got to be worried about, and he can't be seen schmoozing it up and shaking hands with the Saudis after this incident. So that's certainly a big factor for him as well. Neither guy wants to go to Saudi Arabia to do the show.
Are you a little bit surprised, especially at John Cena? He seems like he's always been the company guy. He's always been the good soldier, you know, ready to do anything for the company. So the fact that he's now maybe putting his Hollywood image in front of his WWE affiliations or his WWE loyalties. Does that strike you as a little bit surprising, knowing his past history over the past, 15, 20 years with the company?
Well, he's also the same person who made fun of The Rock for going Hollywood and then did the same thing. No, it
Right.
doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, it doesn't. It's a clear sign to me, if anything, that he is a Hollywood guy now, like it was explained to me, and that is going to be what his priority is. He's still very much a part of the WWE family, but he's not going to risk his career in Hollywood to do something that would not benefit him. And I can't say I blame him either.
Now, with Daniel Bryan's situation, like I said, we saw his storyline with AJ Styles progressing, last night on SmackDown. Is he in a situation where contractually the WWE could force him to go to Saudi Arabia and perform at the show if that's what it came down to?
I don't believe so. I don't think they're forcing anyone to go per se, although, at the same time they're saying, that's not the case, that, people aren't saying they don't want to go. I'm sure there's a lot of people, from what I understand, who are not outspoken that would prefer not to go. But I don't think so. I don't think, they can force them to go unless it's part of their contract, and there's no indication that that specifically is. Obviously, there's a number of dates that they have to meet, but no specific shows like the Saudi show are in there. So, and again, I can't blame them for not wanting to go either.
Have you heard anything from any sources about if that is the case, what the backup plan may be, both for Cena and Daniel Bryan? Obviously, Cena's in the World Cup tournament, so maybe a little bit easier just to kind of plug a new face into that bracket. But Daniel Bryan's got a WWE Championship match coming up at the show. So have you heard anything about what the plans may be if one or both of those guys end up sticking to their, their stance and don't make the show?
Well, that's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to stay with the show in Saudi, with the current matches, and especially if John and Brian decide not to go. They're such, like you said, such a key part of the show. It puts WWE in a real bind as far as that goes. So maybe that gives them more motivation to do something else, but they'll just have to put something else together. I haven't heard any indication of who it could be. I certainly know. Very recently here this week, they've been scrambling to figure this out. They've been very concerned about how this decision will affect their public image and more particular their stock price. They're very concerned about the effect of their stock price.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. As of this recording, we're talking right now on at about 9:15 Eastern time on a Wednesday night. So as of now, the event is still scheduled to go on as scheduled. But as you just alluded to, is the possibility of moving the location, canceling the event altogether? What are the real possibilities of something happening with this event within the next week or so? And if there are changes made, what are some things you're hearing? Would it be a new location? I've heard some things about maybe moving it to somewhere in the UK. What are some things that you've heard that may be some possibilities of some changes? And do you think the event should be changed?
Yeah, those are tough ones, right? I mean, the Crown Jewel show actually was already moved once, within Saudi, I guess, but to a much smaller but nicer stadium. So moving the show again at last minute would be tough. I know initially Vince did not want to move the show, had not planned to move the show whatsoever. But as more details, like very recently this week, have come forward, even regarding the journalist who was dismembered, and that they like put him in acid or something. I mean, it's a really, really drastic situation and cover up, and it just makes it really difficult for WWE. And frankly, to their, in all fairness to them, it's probably a no-win situation for them at this point. But their main motivation is the stock price. And they're just trying to read the situation to see how it would impact it. I was told that it is very likely the earnings report tomorrow will contain the final answer. that being October 25th. We record this the evening of the 24th. So by the time this comes out around that time frame, we should have the answer already as to what they're going to do.
Let's talk a little bit about the show itself, regardless of where it may be held or under what circumstances, the card and some of the things going on. Obviously, we touched on a little bit about Braun Strowman, you know, newly backed on the babyface side of things. He's going to be facing Brock Lesnar now one-on-one for the Universal Championship. Is Braun the guy that they now turn to? Is he the guy that they put the title on for a lengthy run? Is he somebody that they have faith in to really carry the Raw brand? Is he someone that we may see as a transitional champion to get it on to someone that they do see as, you know, the guy, like maybe a Seth Rollins or even a Drew McIntyre? Or is Braun someone that they have faith in that we can they can put the title on him and have him carry the Raw brand for a lengthy title run and kind of take on the mantle from Roman Reigns?
Yeah, so right now I've been told that, you know, they would bet on Braun walking out with the championship based on the current situation. And, you know, that makes sense. He got the big win in Saudi last time for their show. And, you know, the babyface push recently they've had where they've really promoted him big this week. You know, I think he's not a guy that Vince sees as a long-term champion. He's just not that Roman Reigns type of guy in Vince's eye, so I don't see him having just like an overly lengthy championship run, but they have to do something, and certainly there's been an indicator that other guys who could be pushed up into the picture are Seth Rollins, are Dean Ambrose, possibly Finn Balor, and of course Drew McIntyre as well. So those are some of the guys that should start getting opportunities too. But, you know, I do expect Braun to walk out with the championship right now as it stands. But certainly the situation is evolving rapidly, and it should be interesting to see what happens.
It's so crazy to see the trickle-down effect that just one guy can have, you know, regardless of the circumstances. You lose Roman Reigns, so now you've got Braun and Brock for the title. But maybe they don't really want Braun there. They'd rather have someone like Seth Rollins. But if you do that, what do you do with the Intercontinental Championship? You know, it's just amazing the chain reaction that just one domino can have on, you know, an entire roster or an entire brand.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think you have to look at how they have booked Roman Reigns, the character, on TV. They have done everything in their power to get him over, including putting him strongly over everybody else. I mean, everybody else took a back seat. Everybody else was sacrificed as a character for Roman Reigns, the character. And now that he's not there, that is something they have to deal with.
Last bit on Crown Jewel, and something that, especially with this week, has kind of been, I think, forgotten about and put on the back burner, is the fact that Shawn Michaels is making his return to the ring after 8 years at this event. And, you know, I'm a Shawn Michaels fan, have been for a while. You know, I wrote an article about his return for thechairshot.com last week, and I'll kind of pose the same question to you as I did in that article. Do you think that Shawn Michaels' return will be tainted by everything that's going on with this event, the setting, you know, if it is held in Saudi or even if it is moved, you know, the reasons for why it had to be moved, the lackluster booking kind of surrounding his return, the money amount that he is reportedly getting, you know, a lot of people saying that it's just about the money. You know, he's been off for 8 years, and so now he's finally returning just for the big payday. You know, as a Shawn Michaels fan, I'm a little bit disappointed that, you know, I feel like I should be more excited, and it should be more of a feel good moment to have him back in the ring than what it may end up being. So what are your thoughts on his return to the ring kind of being in this backdrop of the Saudi controversy and Crown Jewel and everything else that's kind of gone into it? That's really not, to me, it's not having the impact that it should. You know, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty obvious cash grab. It's something that Vince needed. It's something the Saudis wanted. And, you know, they gave Shawn the right price. And, you know, sure, from a strictly fan standpoint, I totally get it. I mean, you look at retirements in pro wrestling and how many people really stay retired, quote unquote. I mean, when you look at great send-offs, you know, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, you know, Rick unfortunately ruined that in TNA. And, you know, you look at Shawn as well. He had the great send-off with The Undertaker. Phenomenal match, great story. And, you know, many years later, he's going to come back in really what amounts to, let's be honest, a pretty meaningless match worth a lot of money. But I do want to say, you know, you have to look at it from a business standpoint. And I know for fans, that's difficult to do usually. Now, here's a guy who essentially plays a character on TV, on a TV show that he was on for many years. He left that show, and the show wants him to come back for a few short appearances for many millions of dollars. Now, would you do that? Yes, I would take millions of dollars to come back and play a character on TV. I once did, most certainly. So I don't blame him at all. It's just pro wrestling. So I try not to get too caught up in, you know, the nuances of what should he have done as a wrestler, because ultimately it's a business and everybody's in it to make money.
Oh yeah, I definitely don't begrudge him for, you know, if someone throws seven figures, you know, up in my face to wrestle one match, you know, I definitely don't blame him for that. Again, just as a fan, I just hate that his return is going to be connected to all of this controversy and stuff. You know, if he was returning at WrestleMania this year, I think that would be a totally different conversation than the fact that he's taken the money to go to a country that has all these issues, that treats women the way that they do, that now has this, you know, reporter murder issue going on. Just, you know, just a lot of just icky feeling things going on around his return that I would rather it happen somewhere, you know, on a little bit better stage than what it's going down on.
Yeah, that's a very fair point.
Now, have you heard, is this just going to be a one-off, or is he open to more match? You know, will we maybe see him at WrestleMania this year or doing some other big events, or is this simply a one-off for, you know, the Saudi officials that wanted him there and they basically ponied up enough money to get him there?
Well, initially, this was set to be for multiple matches, not just a one-time match. So, you know, the actual Saudi show had the entire Shawn Michaels plan in jeopardy. You know, if he's canceled, then it puts his entire trajectory in jeopardy as far as what they were going to do with him. So it's interesting to watch for that reason alone, too. But, you know, yeah, certainly he is expected to work multiple matches. So it should be really interesting to see what they do going forward with the show.
Another big event that's going down this Sunday is the Evolution pay-per-view, the all-women's pay-per-view that's coming up. I want to first touch on, I guess, kind of some newsworthy items as far as the show's concerned. The impact of some big injuries on the show. Sasha Banks was out. She made her return this Monday, or I think actually last Monday on Raw, so seems to be okay and ready to go for the show. Alexa Bliss is kind of in a murky area. I've seen some reports that she was injured over the couple weeks ago, came back, may have gotten injured again this past weekend. I've seen reports of a possible concussion. What are you hearing as far are any of these injuries possibly putting any of the current matches in jeopardy? And did any of these injuries alter plans that they had going into Evolution to where now the matches we're getting now may have been different than what they had in mind, you know, 2 or 3 months ago?
Yeah, the Alexa Bliss match was never meant to be a tag team match. That's just not the case. So it was going to be a singles match. And, you know, she was hurt a little bit more than they realized. They made it a tag team match. So certainly they did adjust for that. And now, frankly, with the report of the concussion, they're trying to make sure that, you know, she can safely compete at Evolution. You know, that's her current goal. So we'll see what happens, but there's certainly, you know, been some issues to a card that, in my opinion, is lackluster.
Well, that was going to be my next question to you. Do you think that this is really the best card that they could put forth? You know, if they really wanted to make this thing a big event, you know, it's the first all-women's pay-per-view, and this is the card that they come come up with? You know, is it simply just lazy creative? Is it a lack of women superstars to have on the card? Is it too much of a reliance on Ronda Rousey and Charlotte and Becky? What do you think of just the card on paper and how, you know, the event's kind of been built up to this point?
Yeah, I think it's a weak card. I don't plan on watching the show. I mean, you certainly do have Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. We've seen it a lot, to be frank with you. We saw the Performance Center segment, which I didn't think went over very well. I thought it was way too scripted or phony looking. And Charlotte just comes off kind of insincere to me. She's such a natural heel, and you know, the roles there just are, you know, total opposite day. I don't get it. But you know, that match is okay, but we've seen it a lot. Ronda Rousey and Nikki Bella, I think they've done a pretty nice job with the situation of portraying Nikki Bella, the old school diva versus Ronda. There's already a lot of natural heat for Nikki because of the Bellas to begin with. Not necessarily what I would consider a big, you know, pay-per-view leading main event. It to me doesn't meet that standard. So, you know, in that regard, it's, you know, just kind of what it is. You've got a lot of Mae Young Classic matches, you know, NXT matches, people that have no name brand on the main roster that, you know, most of these fans maybe don't realize that, you know, NXT and that audience is a very small part of WWE, right? A very small part of that Raw and SmackDown Live audience actually watch NXT on the network. So they're not familiar with a lot of these guys. And it's easy to get wrapped up in this, you know, kind of smart fan bubble and forget that you're a small minority of the fan base. And, you know, even today when you've lost so many millions of casual fans, your average fan doesn't watch things like NXT and the indies all the time. So a lot of these people are unknown quantities to your average fan. And I think that hurts the momentum of the show. There's not a lot of star power. And even the star power they have, you look at Trish Stratus and Lita, and their returns to Raw have been very underwhelming. The audiences, you know, have proven that with their reactions or lack thereof.
What do you make of the WWE's booking of women in general? You know, obviously this is, you know, supposed to be an evolution. It's supposed to be a time where, you know, women's wrestling is portrayed and presented and valued much differently than it was in the past. But you even made reference, you know, I saw on Twitter to like the Becky and Charlotte segment from SmackDown that they can't have a female segment involving emotion without one of the women crying. You know, you made reference to Charlotte like she was in tears during that segment instead of just being pissed off and angry and wanting to fight. You know, she had to be crying. Nikki Bella actually made some comments that I saw today about being a little bit disappointed that her and Ronda's feud introduced the element of John Cena and introduced the element of their feud being based around men and the men that they have relationships with instead of just a female on female feud. So what's been your opinion of just not only the build up to this event, but also just the WWE's booking of women in general? Have you seen a real change or shift in how they are presenting women's wrestling, or is it mostly just they like to say that it's different, but when really you look at it on an angle by angle basis or what they're actually putting forth, that really it's not much different than what we saw 10 or 15 years ago, aside from the fact that maybe they're not competing in evening gown matches anymore?
Could you imagine Stone Cold Steve Austin giving a speech to the class of NXT at the Performance Center, giving them advice? The Rock interferes, they get into a brawl, and then immediately following that, Stone Cold does an interview where he's nearly in tears because The Rock attacked him. I mean, in the context of the story, you've got, could you imagine a Conor McGregor, a Floyd Mayweather, you know, one of their rivals attacks them, and they do an interview following that where they're nearly in tears, upset at being, no, these people are mad as hell. They're mad and they're angry and they want to hurt you. And that's what they show. And that's not what we got from Charlotte at all. It was just unrelatable. And I think that's the problem you see a lot in their product on TV, is the emotions are just not relatable to real people. And I think in particular, the women's, you know, segments, they can't have any sort of moment, any sort of emotion where they're not crying about something, or the success or the happiness stems from, you know, doing something for the first time or for the women rather than winning the championship or winning the match. You know, it's just I think a very poor presentation of the women that kind of actually insults them even worse. I'm not a fan of the presentation of the women at all. I also am not a big fan that every woman has to be, you know, not every woman has to be Ronda Rousey or a China. It's okay for some women, you know, wrestlers to be Miss Elizabeth, just like it's okay for some men to be Mr. Fuji or Jimmy Hart. You know, so they don't all have to be, you know, badass fighters like Ronda Rousey. There's got to be a variety, but, you know, I just think they do a terrible job presenting them. I think, as we've talked about before, it's a marketing ploy that's been very successful, and that's where their sincerity lies.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, you talk about different characters. You know, Ronda Rousey is great, but I thought Carmella was one of the best women's champions SmackDown has had because she had an actual character. She was a heel that you wanted to boo because, you know, she was a cheap heel that you know, retained the title by cheating and doing things that heels are supposed to do. Everybody wanted to crap all over her reign because maybe she wasn't the best in the ring. Maybe she wasn't as technically skilled as, you know, a Becky Lynch or a Charlotte, but I thought she was entertaining and she was a character that I could at least get into, and it was fun to see her cheat and do, you know, evil things and then to ultimately get her butt kicked in the end. And isn't that what's, you know, the heels are supposed to do? So, you know, I thought that, yeah, like you said, there needs to be a variety. Not everybody can be an MMA fighter or, you know, the daughter of a legend.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you nailed it. You know, not everybody can be that. Carmella had great mic skills as well. You know, good character, yeah, great mic skills. Not everybody is going to be Bret Hart in the ring. Some people are going to be Hulk Hogan. And guess what? He did pretty damn good for himself.
What do you think the lasting impact of this event will be? I know you reported that the event is sold out, which actually was a little bit surprising to me. But that's a positive sign that the live event is sold out. But do you think that this will actually have a lasting impact, you know, on women's wrestling? Will they even have the event again? Will this become a yearly thing, or is it just simply maybe a big PR stunt, you know, lip service, get some positive media exposure for yourself, and then, you know, move on business as usual?
I think a big factor in this was the Saudi show as well. You know, it's very similarly timed. The women obviously can't appear on the show, so now they have a show of their own. I think without the Saudi show, it's fair to question whether there would be an Evolution show at all. But with that being said, you know, a source in WWE told me that, you know, they'll spin it as a success regardless, that it's progress regardless. But the one way to know if they truly feel it is a success is to see if the show takes place next year as well. If it does not, then they do not feel it was a success. So that'll certainly be something to watch for.
Yeah, you mentioned the Saudi show, and this kind of, before we move on to the next topic, but this kind of popped my mind. Who's looking at the calendar and decides to have an all women's pay-per-view a week before they go to a country and have a show that the women are not even allowed to step foot on their soil? How does that even make sense, even from a PR standpoint, that you would have those two shows so closely together, knowing that, especially in today's day and age, that women's rights and that, you know, women's culture in Saudi Arabia is obviously going to be a talking point when that show goes on. So they just throw an all women's pay-per-view on the week before to kind of smooth things over and think everything's going to be fine. I mean, what's the logic in that?
Well, I don't know that you can look for logic in it per se. There really is none, but I think it's circumstantial evidence that the show being so close together at a show they can't attend. I mean, that's just circumstantial evidence that the Evolution show is taking place in part, at least because of the Saudi show.
So you do think that they planned it this way, that they almost wanted them to be in conjunction with each other, that the Saudi show, which couldn't have females on it, they were going to have an all women's pay-per-view right before it to kind of basically even things out.
Yeah, absolutely. Gives them, you know, the same number of dates. They both get the same amount of opportunity to get money. Yeah, I absolutely do.
That just seems ridiculous to me. That seems like something you would not want to do. But I also don't run a billion-dollar wrestling company, so what do I know? Well, let's talk about let's take a little bit of a pivot away from the wrestling side of things and talk a little bit about journalists like yourself and dirt sheet writers. A lot has kind of been talked about this week, especially with the Roman Reigns announcement and the Roman Reigns situation, as well as, you know, some of the various injuries going into Evolution and obviously the controversies with Crown Jewel. So kind of everything we've talked about here tonight. And if people follow you on Twitter at the Brad Shepherd, you've definitely not minced any words about your opinion about, you know, real sports journalists like yourselves who have sources and verify stories before you post them and run with them, compared to, you know, the quote unquote dirt sheets who maybe just connect some dots. Or you even mentioned in the very beginning of our interview about Mike Johnson from the PW Insider, you know, claiming that Roman Reigns was fine and he was working out at a gym this morning and everything's great, there's nothing to be worried about, and then coming out later and saying, oh, Roman Reigns has just announced that he has leukemia. So I kind of want to just give you the floor and just kind of, you know, talk to me about that kind of dynamic, I guess, between journalism and maybe what you think it is that other wrestling insiders do.
Well, I think the craziest thing to me, honestly, is that people actually pay someone like Mike Johnson $11-ish a month to come up with stuff like that. It's just totally absurd to me. And, you know, last year when my big story with the XFL took place, and, you know, I had developed good sources in the company, and I'm not talking about the janitor, you know, the jabroni wrestler, whoever you want to call it, the low-level guy, you know, who has an agenda and is trying to work you. I mean, what you realize is that, you know, a lot of these guys who are reporting on wrestling are, number one, they are fans, totally incapable. They're totally incapable of separating being a fan, which I am too, from the business of what they do, the business of wrestling. And so you end up with reporting with an agenda or with bias or without due diligence. And, you know, I think that's a big problem. But then you have these guys, they charge money. They want to keep their spots. They don't want anyone else taking their spot. So, you know, they're willing to say anything. You know, if you're coming up with information that Roman Reigns is okay, then you are being worked by a source. You're either lying about it, or, you know, your source is so weak that you need to reconsider ever using them again. So it was very telling. When I got really into wrestling journalism initially last year and, you know, developing sources in the company, great sources, you know, to me it became very obvious very quickly how many of those guys, especially the ones being paid, were completely full of crap.
What's your opinion of a guy like Dave Meltzer?
Dave Meltzer is one of the best workers in the business of all time. I think he's made a living out of putting two and two together and a lot of inaccurate information, to be very honest with you. I think Dave is a very good historian. I won't call him great because he has trouble separating his fanboyism from facts. And so for that reason, you know, when you have a Young Bucks Naval move after you and you're marking out over All In, you know, it's hard to take you too seriously. But you know, that aside, he does have a lot of historical knowledge of the business, which is really cool. So I'll give him that. But, you know, as far as anything else, you know, I think he's wrong a lot more than he's right. And I think that, you know, he is in the dark on a lot of big stories. I'll give you, for example, I first reported in June that there was an executive meeting between WWE and Fox, and they wanted to put NXT on FS1. And at the time, Dave Meltzer went out of his way to debunk my story. And now here we are in the month of October. Dave is now saying there's been some discussion and it is a possibility. You're right. It is a possibility. It was a possibility months ago. You just didn't know about it. And that is a credit to my sourcing versus his. So when you get those type of sources, you really do, again, you really, it naturally exposes who really knows their stuff and, you know, who doesn't. It's very obvious. And it's become very obvious to me over the past year.
Well, if us fans are wanting to get some real news and some real deal reporting from yourself, where can we find you on social media, or, you know, where can we get your news reports, and what have you got going on here in the next couple of weeks?
Sure. So follow me on Twitter. That is the main way you can reach me, on Twitter, at the Brad Shepherd, S-H-E-P-A-R-D, at the Brad Shepherd. My DMs are open. You can email me as well, thebradshepherd@yahoo.com. But yeah, certainly Twitter is the easiest way to reach me. I'm fan friendly, of course, as you know. I don't feel like, because I have news about a TV show about fake fights, that I'm better than anybody else. So don't hesitate to message me, talk wrestling or whatever else. You know, I don't have some sort of sense of superiority because I report on sports or wrestling. So feel free to definitely reach out to me on Twitter. And we are launching, myself and John Fisher, good friend of mine. We used to have a podcast backstage in WWE. We are relaunching it under a new name coming up, as you said, in the next couple of weeks. Very, very excited about that.
All right. We'll be on the lookout for that. And so if you ever need a guest on the podcast, you've got my number. You've got my Twitter handle. So just hit me up.
Sure. Will do.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for being with us again on the Wrestle Report and for doing it for us. And thank you so much for what you do, for giving us the real story and the real news and coming out with credible sources and reporting. Like I said, I think it is something that's lost a little bit with so much other stuff out there. It's nice to have somebody that actually takes some pride in their reporting and what they do. And again, I appreciate you taking the time out to be on the podcast with me. And hopefully we get to do it again soon.
Absolutely. The pleasure was all mine.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.
And that will wrap up this week's edition of KWR. I want to thank Brad Shepherd once again for coming on and being a friend of the show. Make sure that you follow him on Twitter at TheBradShepherd. You can also follow me on Twitter at KYWrestleReport or at Corey Guns. And you can find the podcast here on the Chairshot Radio Network every weekend. We'll see you guys next week. And if next week is anything like this week, who knows what we'll be talking about on the next episode. We'll see you guys then. Appreciate you guys listening.
Symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.